God never changes. God can never change. So today I've decided to share my humble beginnings of where I am presently with my belief in who God is, what God means to me, and why I feel this way. One of the persons that I truly have to be so grateful for is my friend Wayne Dyer.
Did you eat the rest of that book? This is
such a partial part of the book. I decided to leave the rest of it home so that I do not damage the rest of it. This is pretty much intact. It is a very, almost a sort of a tethered kind of book right now, but it means so much to me. I would never, ever let this book go. This has been the start of my journey of a life that I know I can call a fulfilled life. And it's the start of my journey because I was only about 18 years. So I'm so young right now, you know. I was only about 18 years when I had the feeling that I needed more in my life. It felt like incompleteness. However, I didn't feel I was totally incomplete. I just felt there must be something more that I'm yearning for. And the yearning was basically not on a physical sense. You know, all my school friends, my girlfriends, they had boyfriends, and you know, they had a really nice looking life, and although we did almost the same things all the time, they looked like they had so much more than I did in terms of their confidence and who they are, and why are the boys looking at them and not looking at me. I pulled my skirt up, you know. So no, let me put that a different way. So I went to a convent. I attended a convent in my high school years, and I attended the convent for at least, I think it was about 5-6 years. And so we at the convent, we were not allowed to have our skirts had to be under past our knees. However, once we got out that locked gate, the gate that was locked throughout the entire day, once we got out in the afternoon, we were like free birds. And so we were all rolling our skirts up so that, you know, it was way past our knees sometimes. And that's how I guess I started feeling an identity of who Gail was and where Gail wanted to be. But for some reason, I still felt that there was some type of shortcoming in my life. And it didn't distress me as much, but I guess it showed a lot in my maybe low self-esteem or lack of confidence in many ways. And no one had to tell me that I didn't have confidence. I could feel it. I knew it. Anyhow, so I lived life, and I it just happened that I came to America with my father one day. We were traveling, and we got stuck in New York, and I happened to remember a friend, and he sort of bailed us out because we could not sleep in the airport at that time, and so he bailed us out and took us to his home, his parents' home at the time. And he must have seen low self-confidence. I had no idea. But I ended up being given this book and said, this was a relatively new book in the market. I think it was in 1977 that it came out. A relatively new book. And he said, it's such a life-changing book. And like The Science of Mind, I couldn't put down this book because there were so many little Bitsy treats for us. The name of the book is Your Erroneous Zones, and I have seen where it has made many different transitions with the covers. But when I got the book Your Erroneous Zones, I thought I had the jackpot, because I thought he gave me a book that said Your Erogenous Zones. I'm like, finally somebody loves me. I have a guy that can look at me and say, wow, you are erogenous. Let's find out more about your erogenous zones. But the more I read the book, I'm like, where is this erogenous zone stuff? And then I had to go back and really look at the title, and it said, oh, your erroneous zones. It kind of was a little bit of a donger, but not for too long, because I really loved what I was reading, you know? And so I wanted to share a little bit of that with you, as it, you know, it looks like my life has been, it's a word I never really used, but I'm going to use like almost predestined, because Wayne is the only book I have really latched on to in terms of a life-changing book. I really liked what happened. I really liked some of the exercises he gave throughout the book. And one of the main things about Wayne is that he literally had me doing exercises, redoing exercises, and really feeling good about myself. The cycle of it is that I did not realize that he was very strong into science of mind. He is literally, I think, he has his main beliefs are science of mind beliefs. At the time, I did not know that. And he also has a very strong, it's beliefs, but it's also he adheres to the philosophy of like Abraham Hicks, I think. And I do, those are the two most famous, most close, most desired philosophies that I like to have in my life. Although Abraham Hicks is really not a philosophy, but it's an understanding of the belief that I have, and it comes in such clarity that I truly feel very connected. So this is an entire cycle, meeting Wayne, going through my 40-something, 50-something years of life, and having that fully come a circle for me with Science of Mind, and now obviously I'm talking about him in a Sterling Study Group, which we are obviously, talking about the core beliefs of Science of Mind, the things that truly is about life. You know, Science of Mind is a way of life, is a way of thinking. And by changing our thinking, we change our lives. And that's what Wayne Dyer did for me. So in the beginning of the book, he had a story. He talked about putting a worm in a bottle with water, maybe an earthworm, I guess, or some other worm. But putting a worm in a bottle with water and seeing how the worm wriggled its way, got to the side, and crawled out. I do not like worms, by the way. Then he also showed where he put the worm in undiluted alcohol, and he drew everybody's attention and said, just keep looking at the worm, and obviously the worm disintegrated before their eyes. And so he said, well, what's the moral of the story? And someone from way in the back shouted out, I am seeing that if you drink alcohol, you'll never have worms. So with me having a horrible dislike of worms, I think I'll have to keep drinking alcohol. I'm kidding. I really need to really obliterate worms from my life. But he used worms as a sort of a metaphor, thank you, as to mean the areas in our lives that are you know, self-defeating, that, you know, our self-sabotage, and obviously our erroneous zones. And of course, I have hundreds of erroneous zones. And over the years, I can go back to that initial questionnaire where it was a questionnaire on happiness. And most of my answers were no, looking back at my answers now from the book. But so that was a good thing for me to go back into the book and see how far I have come and how easy it was to answer and feel good about the questions that I've read over, knowing that I have truly come from a space of changing my thinking. All right. So what are the worms? So you'll hear and see what the worms are, and in Wayne's words, Wayne Dyer's words, you'll hear and see what you want based on your values, your beliefs, your biases or prejudices, and of course, based on your own personal story. All right. So, like the guy, if he said, you know, if you drink alcohol, you'll never have worms. People will come up with their own story to explain what happens in their own lives, all right? So worms, as I said, are self-defeating behaviors, your erroneous zones. So how do I change them? How do I obliterate them from my life? Because I certainly don't want them. Well, I have to tell you, change is tough, and we all know that. Change is really tough. And however, it's not too tough when you really want to change. If you have that as a determination and you know what your outcome would look like, oh my goodness, you would truly work hard at it. All right? So if you are like most people, every fiber of your being will resist having to take on the hard work of eliminating the thoughts that support your self-forfeiting beliefs and behavior. So we truly hold on to what feels good, regardless of whether it is a self-defeating behavior or not, all right? And so, in a way, that could be like an addictive type of behavior, because if it is that we feel so good with what we have, even if we know it is not the best judgment we are making or the best good feeling place we are putting ourselves in, but because it feels comfortable and it feels easy, we would choose to stick with that, all right? So so if we are going to be enthused about change, we have to be enthused with what is the outcome? Where do I see my life? Where, you know, what are the things that open for me? What are my possibilities, all right? And so in realizing that we need to change, we should not emphasize the zones or the beliefs that we are trapped in, all right? So for change to happen, we must have insight, all right? And this insight we have to see happen over and over again, because when a habit forms, it doesn't just form. It happens because we have a thought process, and from the thought process, we have emotions that follow that thought process, all right? So it's from thought to emotion to feelings and then to habit. So throughout this book, there are two main themes, all right? The first one was basically about managing my own emotions, my own choices about my emotions. Am I taking full responsibility for who I am? How I want to feel? Am I becoming happier and more effective because of my choices? And the one thing that really struck me is that I am who I am because of all the choices I've made up until now. I love using the word up until now because I am not locked into any particular situation, all right? If I am not happy with who I am up until now, I can still make a change. And Wayne Dyer talks a lot about being in the moment. All right. And the other part, the other thing that this book talks a lot about is taking charge of my now moments. All right. So in questions like, why am I choosing to feel upset right now? Or how can I make a more effective presentation as opposed to feeling down and feeling low, feeling depressed? How can I present myself in a more effective way? All right, so I have where on page 17, it's still a very usable book, by the way. Okay. And in the first chapter, he talked about taking charge of yourself. And I'm just going to read it. It said, look over your shoulder. You will notice a constant companion. For want of a better name, call him your own death. You can fear this visitor or use him for your personal gain. The choice is up to you. With death so endless a proposition and life so breathtakingly brief, ask yourself, should I avoid doing the things I really want to do? Should I live my life as others want me to? Are things important to accumulate? Is putting it off the way I want to live? Chances are your answers can be summed up in a few words. Live. Be you. Enjoy. And love. All right? So your happiness is your baseline. Whatever makes you most happy, that's where you want to be. Regardless of whether you want to hoard things, if hoarding makes you happy, I guess that's where you are. We can talk about what happens because of hoarding, but the actual aspect of living and enjoying the life you have, as opposed to living the life somebody else wants you to live, is someone could say you're selfish because of that. But who is the important person here? You know, so choosing how you feel, feelings are not just emotions that happen to you. Feelings are reactions you choose to have. If you are in charge of your own emotions, you don't have to choose self-defeating reactions. So what is some self-defeating behaviors or self-defeating actions? If there are any behavior you engage in that is self-sabotaging, that takes you away from what you want, or that distracts you from your goal, So those are what we call self-defeating behaviors. And these behaviors, you would notice, will really zap your energy. They would have you feeling really exhausted. They have you feeling low-level energy, you know. And that's the kind of feeling I was having as a teenager, early adolescent, when I was like, there must be something more, you know. I just don't feel that this is me. And of course, I'm sure I had tons of self-defeating behavior. So let's look at some of the regular ones. Procrastination. Another one. Blaming others instead of accepting responsibilities for mistakes. Another one is not listening. And not listening is big, because not listening could be truly a self-sabotaging. It's almost like, could be like procrastination. It could mean that, okay, I know I need to hear this. I know I need to do this. I don't want to. So in some ways, you just tune out. And not listening is really putting you in a self-sabotaging way, because it means that you're delaying the process of change, all right, or of moving forward. Another another self-defeating aspect is when you want to please others, people pleasing. Another one is always being right. You know of anyone who is always right? Making excuses, whether they are major excuses or minor excuses, for the failure you're experiencing. So, for example, like completing a project or showing up on time or stopping at the store as promised, whatever it is, making excuses, which I was a little bit astonished about as a self-defeating behavior, but it truly is, okay? Another one is needing to be perfect. So, for example, obsessing so long over the exact right words in your report that you've made it late. Okay, so pushing yourself to the limit, to the peak of perfection, and as a result of that, sabotaging everything else that follows. Frequent self-sacrifice, and then feeling sorry for yourself. Okay, becoming a victim, being attracted again and again to people who will mistreat you, even though they seem different at first. I know a lot of people like that. Being uninterested in or not attracted to people who treat you well. Not allowing yourself pleasurable experiences or being drawn to situations in which you suffer. So it's either or, you from one angle, one extreme to the other. Either you want to suffer or you're just truly not trying to enjoy life. Rejecting help or refusing to ask for help is a self-defeating behavior. Being unwilling or afraid to make a career change, or change within your career that would be beneficial. All right, so we have quite a lot here. Sometimes just low self-esteem, lack of confidence, inability to connect with people, always having like toxic relationships, procrastination. All right, all these are self-sabotaging examples. Another one is, you know, doing a priority list, and instead of starting at the top, you start at the bottom.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I don't know. That's one of the examples. But I thought it was interesting because, if it's a priority list and I have 10 things on my priority list, I think I could go with any one of them. But apparently, one should start at the top. Who knows, right? Okay, I say no to your kids, and then later on, 15 minutes later, you give in to them. All these are like examples of what self-sabotaging examples are, messages are. All right, so we want to be clear that you are the person responsible for who you truly are and for how you feel. All right, you feel what you think. Thoughts are things, as we know. All right, so even if we have thoughts, are we in a clear position to clarify our thoughts? Are we latched on to the idea or the message behind the thought, and as a result create that emotional aspect, which usually that's how life is. Life is like you hear of someone dying, okay? Before you were like 2 minutes before you heard the news, you were the happiest person ever. But then you heard of death, someone close to you dying, and then your whole life is changed, you know, your whole demeanor, you're so sad, and truly you should be. However, why did that change? What happened? So it is the thought behind, it is the thinking of what happened. What is it that I associate with this person? What is it that I'm going to miss as a result of this person dying and all that, that creates that heavy emotion that follows thought, all right? So we can truly decide, you know, in which way we would put our emotions in terms of our thoughts. So you can learn to think differently. However, you must decide to do so. All right, so in trying to be responsible, we definitely have to be responsible for our actions. So one of the things in this book is being responsible for our actions is on page 23. You have grown up in a culture which has taught you that you are not responsible for your feelings, even though the syllogistic truth is that you always were. You've learned a host of sayings to defend yourself against the fact that you do not control your feelings. Here is a brief list of such utterances that you have used over and over again. You hurt my feelings. We hear that all the time. Mm-hmm. You make me sad. You make me sick. You scare me. All right? I can't help the way I feel. I just feel angry. Don't ask me to explain it. All right? You're embarrassing me. You made a fool out of me. All right? So these are what we grew up with. These are the things that, you know, that gave our lives power, that made us feel that we had a strong foundation for feeling and being who we are. All right? But we know that, yes, God is all there is. We know that God is perfection. Now I know. I didn't know that before. However, I knew that it was okay to be jealous. It was okay to feel that if you're in a relationship and you smile at someone else, it's like, you don't do that. That is unacceptable. And this kind of stuff. So, and this is how we were trained to think. However, Wayne Dyer helped me unlearn those erroneous way of thinking. All right? So now, having to rewrite that list, make it more accurate to me and how I feel, and thankfully I've had many, many years of rewriting the list to clarify my thoughts, I can now say things like, I hurt my feelings because of the things I told myself about your reaction to me. What do you think of that? I hurt my feelings because of the things I told myself about your reaction to me. So what I can see right away is I can only control the things that I can control. I can't control your reactions, but of course I can feel that because your reactions were in a specific space that I reacted negatively to it. But you didn't make me do it. I did it because intrinsically that's how I was taught to react, okay? So in taking full and personal responsibility for our lives and for our thoughts, I have to now turn it around and say, I made myself feel bad. You didn't make me feel bad. So I take that judgment off of you. I take that hardship off of you, all right? I can help the way I feel, but I've chosen to be upset. Wow. Yeah. I've decided to be angry because I can usually manipulate others with my anger. Since they think I control them anyhow. Lots of wives do that to their husbands, by the way. All right? They think that they have total control, and just by body actions, they Well, I guess lots of people do that, so I'm not discriminating with the women. I make myself feel sick. I scare myself at high places. I'm embarrassing myself. I turn myself on whenever I'm near you, you know. I made myself feel foolish by taking your opinions of me more seriously than my own and believing that others would do the same. All right, so this is taking full and personal responsibility for your own self, for your own happiness. Happiness, as we know, is our natural birthright. Just look at the children. Look at Lavanya. I mean, yeah. You just exude happiness. Mm-hmm. All right? So in knowing that, and I'm going to stop here because it has so much to learn about what our erroneous zones are, but these are the first few things that truly caught my attention. And knowing that our happiness is our natural birthright, I am, and looking back at the cycle or the circle of my life, now knowing that I am truly feeling loved and supported by a philosophy that has encouraged me to know and to feel that it's all God, it's all good, it's always okay, no matter what. Regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the situations that I find myself in, I have an opportunity to use my thoughts, to use, to sort of clarify my thoughts, to bring out the best emotions, to bring out the best feeling that I can have. It is truly a personal responsibility. Nobody makes us do anything except us. I am that divine being that expresses only and solely through me, through this divine universe, all right? And so if I am, and I am portraying myself as the one and only, as that perfect expression of God, then I truly have to take the responsibility for my own life, for my own thoughts, for my own thought processes. And as Ernest Holmes in the Science of Mind textbook, he said on page 75, he was talking about what the science of mind is. He said, no one has seen cause. In the past, you would say no one has seen God. Because we see an effect, we know there must be cause. Nothing is more evident than the fact that we live. And since we live, we must have life. And since we have life, there must be life. So the only proof that we have is our mind. All right. The only proof we have of mind is that we think. And so the eternal principle is forever hidden. So just know that because we are the expression of life, because we are who we have a mind. And because of our mind, we obviously think. So let us, my encouragement to you is to in as much as we can, in whatever situation, circumstances, conditions we are in, is to just take a moment and think about the thoughts that we have. Are the thoughts we are holding a true expression of the life we want to live? Is it a true expression of the divine in us, moving in as and through us? Is it a thought that maybe need clarification a little more so that we literally have it being expressed as joy, as a result, as opposed to maybe an expression of of guilt or blame or judgment on someone, all right? So because life is supposed to be lived happily and willingly and easily, and so if life is supposed to be easy, then it all starts with our thought. Our thoughts create our emotions. As a result of our emotions, we have these feelings, and the feelings are strong. And because the feelings are strong, it literally propels us into habits, okay? We must follow the feelings because that's how life is. So if we have sad, you know, depressed emotions, thinking, thoughts, then we are going to eventually end up into, you know, sad, emotional, you know, sort of a depressed type of habitual actions that we take on a daily basis. But if you think of joyous, if you think of habits that would lift you, or thoughts that would lift you and put you into a different place, put you in a place of maybe accountability, put you in a place of, oh my goodness, I'm truly responsible for the clarity of my thoughts, and move yourself pretty much into a type of habitual living that is going to encourage good, well, I was going to say clean, but good creative thoughts. All right? So I thank you so very much. Wayne Dyer continues to evolve in my life. I am so grateful for him. I know he has contributed tremendously to this universe. This book alone, this was the second book he had ever written. The first one was Pulling Your Own Strings. But this book alone stayed like almost, I think it's a year and something on the bestsellers market. He sold 35 million copies of this book. So I know he has blessed many lives besides the one I am thinking is the most important right now. All right, so thank you very much for allowing me to share my my circle of life right now from a Wayne Dyer's perspective. Thank you. Thank you.